This is Graham Atwell welcoming you to Sounds of the Bazaar live. Live internet radio. Live from the Mobile Learning Conference Bremen. And we're holding this conference in a beautiful spot. It's the Youth Hostel Bremen. It's a wonderful sunny day. The conference organisers have done a brilliant job in managing the weather. I'm looking out over the river. It's flowing past us. There's people around eating. There's a lovely lounge area downstairs where people are on their mobiles talking. What's the conference all about then? Well, it's a two-day conference about use of mobile devices for learning, but not just any conference. I don't know if, like me, you're getting tired of those big conferences, those impersonal events where there's endless speakers, and where we usually say, and we all say it, don't we, the best learning takes place outside the conference, in the social spaces, in the evenings, in the bars, and the conference is rather an excuse to be there. And what we're trying to do with this conference is to merge those spaces, to merge the formal and the informal, to make it all flow together. And of course, the physical space where you hold it is a vital part of that, as well as the online spaces. The second thing I think we really want to get is an interchange of ideas, not just using mobile devices for teachers as another means of technology in the classroom, but really looking into the wider area of how mobile devices can transform learning, transform how we share ideas, and once more, move those spaces, new spaces for ideas and learning. And I suppose to say, because I've been one of the people involved in organising it, one more thing is Mobile Learning Conference Bremen is cheap. It's only €50. How do we do that? Because we don't have a grand conference gala dinner. We don't give away a free iPad. We were really concerned that this conference should be accessible to everybody, not just the people lucky enough to have well-funded projects or a big university department backing them, but really accessible to people who are interested, who want to come because they're interested in the ideas. And it looks a pretty well good event. It looks like we've achieved that already. We've got over 100 people here from I don't know how many countries. And in this programme, Sounds of the Bazaar, we're going to be talking to some of those people. Dirk Stierglitz, as ever, is on the decks, running the technology for it. My colleague Jenny Hughes is going to be doing some interviewing. I'm going to be wandering back and forth. We're going to go into a short musical break now. Dirk's going to play us some wonderful music. And when he comes back, don't go away, because Jenny Hughes is going to be talking to Daniel Ryman, who did the first keynote speech at the conference this morning.
Of the world. You can't meet from love. You can't pay bills from love. You can't use it as guarantee when you ask for a loan. But I don't need a big house and I don't need a Porsche.
Daniela, really good to see you again. How long is it since we met last?
Well, I think it was a year ago or something.
In some random conference, in some random bar in Europe.
Somewhere in Bremen,
I think. I didn't even know you were going to be here till I turned up this morning, so that was a really nice surprise. Loved your presentation this morning. It was great.
Thank you.
It was a really long presentation, and I kept up with it every inch of the way I was there, and I had loads of questions. In fact, I asked the first question, and I had lots more. But I've got a second bite of the cherry now, okay? So I'm going to ask you some more questions that I really want to find out about.
Okay.
You're talking this morning about the integration of art and technology and using technology in a creative and imaginative way,
mm-hmm.
Okay? Lots and lots of ideas there. But I'm a teacher, okay? So when I go back Just give me some ideas, some practical things that I can do with kids I'm teaching.
It depends a little bit on what age they are.
Primary school age.
We have different kinds of technologies. Like, for example, we're currently working with a smart textile things. So you could.
Can I just stop you there? Can you give me some detail? What smart textiles mean?
It's mini stitchable boards like Arduino and little sensors and things you can actually put into clothes and develop some kind of interactive textile clothes.
Okay. This morning we saw lots of ideas.
Okay.
That you could only just refer to very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. Some of them were fascinating. I just wanted to know more. The one about the plants, what was all that about?
That was actually an artwork by Christa Sommerer and Laurent Mignonneau. They are media artists, and they exhibited this one, which is kind of a classic of interactive art. And it's actually plants. Which have sensors, little sensors implemented. And as soon as you touch those, there is in the background, there's a huge screen and there's a virtual plant growing. So, and actually, after so many people touched this one, the plant died and what was left was the virtual one. So that was a bit of a interesting bit.
So again, from a teacher's perspective, how much does it all cost? How much do I need to spend?
We don't work with this expensive high technology things, but we use rather low cost solutions, like the Arduino Eduware starter kit is like 100 euros or something for one. Mm. And you have a collection of different kinds of actuators and sensors inside, so you can just start easily.
Okay, how do we get more information? How do we get the training? I mean, you talked this morning about going into the classroom, working with children, and letting the teachers join in.
Yeah.
So
more information you can find on my website, or just if you contact me, if there's a school interested or a teacher interested.
Can you give people your website address then, Daniela?
It's www.danielareimann.de.
I think you might need to spell that.
D-A-N-E-I-E-L-A Reimann, R-I-R-E-I-M-A-N-N.de.
Okay, and that will be published anyway. So, Daniela, thanks very much indeed.
Yeah,
that was great.
You're welcome.
Look forward to having a drink with you later.
Thank you.
Sounds of the Bazaar. You're listening to Sounds of the Bazaar, the sounds of the spring, the sounds of the sun, live from Mobile Learning Conference Bremen. Don't go away, because we've got some great guests lined up. They're queuing up here. Sounds of the Bazaar. Into a musical break, Dirk. Sounds of the Bazaar, live internet radio. Welcome back. And Jenny Hughes, we finally managed to catch Klaus Rumler, who's one of the organisers. We've got him pinned down because he's rushing from place to place, panicking about everything, which is always the way when you're organising conferences. But Jen's going to have a quick chat with him anyway. Thanks, Klaus, for sparing us the time.
And he's told me, I've only got 2 minutes, so this had better be good, Klaus. How long has it taken you to actually organize this conference?
So we started last fall, and in mid-January it got really, really busy. Then in February we started to go into a routine with it even, and just last week things got really, really, really going, and now as we're in the program it kind of feels like it should always have been so.
And were there any big nasties happening? Were there any really bad bits?
The main sponsor dropped out just 2 weeks ago.
And that's not good.
This was kind of a nightmare.
But you've recovered from it and everything is going really, really well. The atmosphere is great. So what gave you the idea to start with?
When we moved here to Bremen, we quickly decided to have this thing sometime in Bremen, as Graham is here, and now Judith and I are here, so three ones of the London Mobile Learning Group are all of a sudden in Bremen, and so we decided, okay, we are mobile, actually, and so we can do it in Bremen, and not only in London.
So do you think this is going to be a regular event? Are you hoping this can be a follow-up?
I guess there will, and I already know that there is kind of an application to have it maybe in Turkey.
In Turkey, that sounds good. I've never been to Turkey. Make sure it's in Turkey. This is good.
Me too. I'm looking forward to that.
Okay, Klaus, I'm going to let you go now, because as an organiser, I can see at least four people waiting for you to solve some problems here.
Yeah, thank you, and see you later.
Hope so.
Sounds of the Bazaar, live from the Mobile Learning Conference, Bremen. A short musical break, and then we'll be talking to Anya, is it, Anka, who's going to be telling us something about museums.
Anchor. Today I've had at least three people, when we were talking about who we're going to have on the radio, saying, you've got to talk to Anchor. And I'm saying, what does Anchor do? Oh, she does things with museums. So that's all I actually know. So can you fill me in on what you actually do?
What I'm actually doing. So, well, I will start with my first project with the museum. It was supposed to be a multimedia-based guide within my study course. And yeah, the museum had certain issues because they were afraid of people getting distracted because of too much multimedia.
Where was this?
It was a ship museum in Bremerhaven. So we finally chose to install a stationary game there, where you just play for 5 minutes a game, and then after it you can concentrate on the exhibits again. What I'm doing now is I try to advance the notion or the media of audio in a museum. Even it sometimes seems a bit old-fashioned to just having audio guides, I think it has certain advantages because of bringing alive the exhibits and not distracting from them through too much multimedia on a device.
Can you tell me a bit about how you came to do this? I mean, is your background in education or is it in museum work?
My background is more educational, so I studied digital media, and my interest for audio is more a personal thing. I try to combine it. So.
And how many museums have you worked in? Is it just the one in Bremerhaven?
That's first the one in Bremerhaven, then I worked with the Modern Art Museum, the Weserburg here. We did an audio guide for children. So our aim with this audio guide was really having a system just based on audio.
How did the children respond to it?
Fine, actually, we based our work that we had regular meetings with the children, with the school class of, I think they were 9 to 10 years old. So we worked close together with them to get ideas. And finally, on what they say about this modern art, we create a story and make kind of audio dramas.
Give me some more detail on that one. It sounds fun. What sort of things were the children saying?
If I could remember. So our main artwork was a Boltanski room under the roof. It's consisting of a really dark room with old metal boxes. And nobody knows what is inside the boxes. So the people can, or the children guessed what could be inside of these boxes. And yeah, they say there could be old bones or skulls or anything weird. So probably adults wouldn't have had these ideas, what could be in these boxes.
That sounds absolutely brilliant. So what's going to happen next? Have you got some ideas for the future that you want to work on?
Yes, currently I'm working on, it's my master thesis. That's what I want to present here. It's, it should be an audio guide for the Ship Museum again, dealing with the Hanseatic Cock. I will try out what to do with audio only to, bring the exhibits alive with the audio object and with a proper sound design.
So are you doing a session this afternoon?
Yeah, tomorrow I'm going to.
Can you just give us a little bit of an advance advert for your session tomorrow?
Good question. So it's about my master thesis, and it's just in the very beginning. So I just give an overview how audio can be exploited for mobile applications, and my research question where I have the hypothesis that just including or adding to a pure audio narration, having some audio objects or to create audio images, that it will benefit learning to bring the context of exhibits alive of the ship.
Anke, good luck with your master's thesis, good luck with your work, and I hope to join your session tomorrow.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
You're listening to Sounds of the Bazaar, live internet radio, live from Mobile Learning Conference Bremen, and I think we're going to go straight to another interview. We've got so many wonderful people lined up here wanting to talk to us, and so many great ideas coming back. Over to you, Jen.
Is it over to me again? No music? My goodness. I'm talking to Julie Laxton.
Hello.
Julie, you were the first person that I saw this morning when I walked into the room and I asked you what you did.
Yes, yes.
And where you were from. And you're from Leeds University?
University of Leeds, yes.
I think half of Leeds University is actually at this conference. It's brilliant.
We have three presentations here, one way or another. One is about the use of iPhones with our fourth and fifth year medical students, which Christopher Murray is leading. And then tomorrow we have two presentations about the evaluation of mobile devices across all health and social care students when they're in practice to be able to learn and do assessments. And in the afternoon we have four medical students with us who are going to share with the audience here how they evaluated the iPhone program within the medical school.
What, real students here?
Real students here, yes.
It's a bit subversive.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Can you tell me what you actually do at the university? What's your role?
My role at the university, I'm actually the teaching fellow for the ALPS program, which is Assessment and Learning in Practice Settings. It's been a five-year program, and we're just now embedding all the work and drawing up our evaluations and sharing our results and outcomes with people at conferences like this, because we believe that we made some mistakes and we had some good outcomes, and all those things should be shared so that people don't make the same mistakes as we did. Or that they know what things went well and why they went well.
One of the things I'm particularly interested in, you work across faculties, you're saying this morning.
Yeah.
You're based in the medical faculty, but you work across the university?
I work across those people who work with health and social care. So I work with nurses, medical students, dental students, social work students, audiology students, and they all demonstrate different ways of using mobile devices in practice and different outcomes depending on what their requirements were for their curriculum. So whilst we had a whole holistic approach across the programme, we did actually get a great variety of different results, which is fabulous. I'm going to share those with you tomorrow.
One of the things I'm really interested in is that you've got some sort of, you particularly, have got an institutional perspective on this.
Yes.
I mean, as well as being a practitioner, how did you get it organized at an institutional level? I mean, how did you get it going in the first place?
Really difficult, by talking to people and listening to people, listening to what other tutors wanted, understanding their problems and their perspectives, and trying to actually implement in a way which was advantageous to them. So that did differ between the different professions that we have across the faculties.
And what did you come across any management problems? I mean, were there institutional barriers or blocks somewhere?
Oh, yes.
Tell me about them.
in the health service particularly, we had huge problems of people not understanding that we weren't sending unencrypted data across the transfer. So we had encryption, all our tools were encrypted. We had problems that they thought students were just looking at Facebook or on the internet while they should have been looking after patients. Yeah, we had all sorts of issues, but you just have to go and talk to people and listen to people and enable them to solve their issues, yes.
And how long have you been working on this? I mean, it sounds now that you've got it cracked, but how long has it taken you?
Oh, 5 years plus. We'll just have one extra year of work. And I think it'll be quite a long way down the line before some areas actually appreciate the real advantages of students having mobile learning and assessment in practice. But we've got some good wins, and others will follow suit, I'm sure.
That's brilliant, and I'm really looking forward to hearing from your students. And if you can find one of them who wants to come and talk to me today or tomorrow preferably, and give me their side of the story, that would be great.
I will do.
Thanks very much.
Thank you too. I'll ask one of the students to see you tomorrow.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
To the Bazaar, live from Mobile Learning Conference Bremen. We're going to have a short musical break, and we're going to be back with Andy Black talking about future trends.
Where I'm now, when I was a child, I always thought I was something fair enough. Everything seemed to flow by itself. There was food on the table.
We hope you're liking the music we're playing this afternoon. All the music is Creative Commons, and you can get it from the wonderful Yamendo website. Do go and check that out, because people think with anything Creative Commons you won't get good music, and it's really good stuff there. So it's all we'll give you in the program guide with this program. We'll give you the website link. Anyway, over to Jen, who's going to be talking to Andy Black.
Andy, the last time we met was in Online Educa, I think, before Christmas. We can't go on meeting like this. At least I think I interviewed you. Yes, I did.
Yes, that's right.
Well, I'm going to ask you some different questions this time, so that's good. Graham has said that you're going to talk this afternoon about trends. I mean, is this in hemlines or soft furnishings?
Looking at trends in functionality in devices and types of devices that learners are going to start wandering into your institutions with now, if they haven't already started to, really.
And I know this is a whole session this afternoon, but do you want to tell us what some of those trends are?
Yeah, I'm basically running two sessions, really, actually tomorrow. One, I'm looking at what's happening in terms of devices and things like near-field communications, which, for people that are based in London, is the technology behind the Oyster card, but that's coming to mobile phones very soon. So the idea, if you want to swipe your phone to make a small payment for lunch or whatever in university, or get data onto your phone from a learning platform or whatever, you can do that kind of stuff. And also, I think there's a whole issue around location-based services on mobile devices, about where learners are and what they can do, and some privacy issues that maybe learners want to be around, about tagging photographs and protecting their privacy, as well as using it as a learning aid.
And can you tell us, I mean, you talk about trends, are these things of the future or are they happening right now?
I think we're looking at some things that, you know, if we're talking about trends in the next year, we are certainly saying that you know, mobile's already here. Wake up, it's already here. The near-field communication is the next 12 to 18 months. Location-based services is here and now. And also in the next 3 to 5 years, if you look at the Horizon report from the States, you're talking about things like augmented reality and gesture-based technology on mobile devices. So being able to control a device by moving hands, whatever. So a slightly more advanced version of the pinch and swipe on the iPhone and the Android phones.
I saw some great slides by Steve Wheeler looking at wearables, and he had some just amazing pictures coming from MIT.
Yeah, if you look at some of the stuff that's coming up, there's a lot of thing about AI, eyewear, and if you haven't looked, just look up the views. Just Google Vuzix, that's View and then IX on the end, and look at some of the stuff they're doing with projected eyewear. But then they're making glasses that have got cameras facing forward. So not only are you looking at things projected onto the screen, but then it's picking images from the outside and mixing the real with the virtual. And the other thing that's going to happen, and that's probably for 10 years hence, is some kind of, in certain very special situations, contact lenses are actually eyewear. So you put them within your eyes. And I'm going to be showing a slide of that tomorrow, which is some prototypes already being produced. So actually that's, I'm not sure we'll see that in an educational context, but I think you might see it in a medical context, maybe in surgery or advanced electronics and that kind of stuff. And I think the military are already looking at that kind of stuff already, let's be frank.
So these are some of the things that are possible and will be happening over the next several years. Where do you think the universities are at the moment? I mean, are they catching up, or is it just a small number of university departments sort of dabbling in this?
I think it's a really interesting one. If you're looking at wide-scale implementation, it's very difficult to find anywhere in the world that's doing a really wide-scale implementation. I mean, you hear much talk of some of the American universities going for a completely Apple approach or whatever, but the fact that wide-scale use of especially learner-owned devices, so not doing a deal where you buy all your learners one particular type of device, that's, let's be frank, very, very few and far between. But there's lots of universities who are trying to get into that area. But it's difficult. It is hard. And there are some issues for network people and some issues for teaching and learning people as well.
And do you think this is going to move from higher education, where most of the experimentation is done, down to school level?
I think it's quite tricky with school level, because some of the issues we talk about with young adults and privacy are much more of a big e-safety issue with children. But the fact that it's starting to happen, if you look at the availability of just more simple technology like digital cameras and that kind of technology within schools, it is certainly trickling down. But the mobile issue and privacy is a big concern for schools, obviously.
Yeah, I do a lot of teacher training, and we've done training courses on using mobiles. But so many schools are still saying mobiles are banned.
Yeah, it's a really tricky one, and some schools are approaching it, and they're dealing with looking at acceptable use policy, so the learners, there's a trade-off with the learners and the school about how user mobile should be used appropriately. But it's a difficult issue.
So you actually teach students yourself, or are you just researching?
Just researching.
Okay, are there students, I mean, do you have any feedback from the students who are actually using the mobile technologies?
I think what happens is, the fact is they're really enjoying it because it's their own preferred device. I think if you try and give the learners your set device, it's the most uncool thing going if you've all got the same thing. But there is an issue about how do you include learners that maybe don't have the access to the latest device, and there's a whole digital envy, as I describe it, or you know, digitally disempowered because you haven't got the latest device. But it, you know, it's becoming more noticeable the way that learners are walking into colleges, universities with devices.
Andy, that's brilliant. I'm going to say goodbye now, but good luck for your session tomorrow, and I'm hoping to be there.
Thanks a lot. Cheers, bye.
Sounds of the Bazaar, live internet radio, live from Bremen, live from the Mobile Learning Conference Bremen. We're going to take a musical break, and then it's going to be back with John Traxler. Welcome back. We're hoping you're enjoying the music this afternoon, and we certainly hope you're enjoying our guests. And Jenny Hugh is now going to be talking to John Traxler. I'm not quite sure what about, but I'm looking forward to it anyway.
I don't know either, and neither does he. All I know is that the last time I met you was on Educare Online, yet again.
Yes, again, yes. I'm afraid so.
And I tried to contact you about 2 months ago, and the message I got was, he's not in the country. When's he going to be back? Oh, he's never in the country. So you've been travelling. You're probably the best travelled researcher at this conference.
No, where that's most, think? Not best. There's a difference.
Okay, so where have you been and what have you been doing?
What, this year? Oh, well, I supervise a project in Cambodia, so I've been there. They're building SMS technology to support rural sexual health education. IARDIS mobile learning in Spain, which was a more research-oriented activity. A week's teaching at the University of Katowice, trying out a course on mobility and connection. Must think of some more. Carl Smith and I both did keynotes at the Blackboard User Group conference in Durham, which was great fun, and was a lot more academically respectable and less tied to Blackboard than you'd think. In fact, hardly tied at all. Okay, where am I? Oh, last week, a seminar for the École Supérieure Normale in Paris on the subject of, surprisingly enough, mobile learning. The End of the Classroom Paradigm, I thought it was called. I think I've been to Belgium. Oh, Belgium? I can't remember. Sorry. I'd have to look at my diary. Sorry about this. That's this calendar year.
That's not bad since January. Okay, most of the time you're working on these projects because they want your expertise, I'm presuming. But what are the lessons that you're bringing back with you? What are some of the things that you've learned that you're bringing back into your own work here?
Certainly that actually mobile learning isn't quite as monolithic or monocultural as we think. And actually, I think that's the attraction of this conference, that I don't think we get enough exposure to the kind of Germanic turn or the French turn as we should, in fact. And I think that a lot of mobile learning is dominated by a Anglo-American global take on how it should happen, derived from a kind of set of icons like, I don't know, Gordon Pask or Diana Lorillard. And seeing these other perspectives puts a bit more ventilation around, you know, what a set of ideologies that are becoming a bit static and staid. So, I'm learning that different countries do mobile learning in different ways. And the Americans in the US are about to do it in a big way. And I think there's a risk in 3 or 4 years' time we'll end up thinking that that was the only way. So I think any attempts to kind of preserve the diversity is going to be very, very good. So
this is media imperialism 21st century again. But tell me about some of the specific things that you found out that they're doing in other countries that might be interesting.
Oh, goodness. I think at an academic or research level, that there's quite a lot of, well, not so much duplication as refining and getting into the detail. I think gradually the technologies and the platforms become more reliable and dependable, and we're actually in a position to think more about the pedagogy and the teaching. And that, I think, means that contextual and informal mobile learning become far more possible, and we can look actually at the environments and what's going on amongst people. But I'm not sure if at the level of research and development there's a big difference around the world. I mean, I think the infrastructure clearly makes a difference, and what we can do in Western Europe is not what you can do in Cambodia, or indeed in many parts of Southern Africa. So I think there's now more and more individual small-scale learnings as the whole discipline becomes bigger, more established, more literature to refer back to.
I'm going to ask you one last question, the same one as I asked Andy, actually. Okay, how far away are we from a sort of mass take-up in higher education?
Well, I think we're at a point where, for the last maybe 10 years, mobile learning has been at the forefront of technology-enhanced learning as deployed, delivered, funded from within the institutions. And apart from the fact we can't afford it anyway, what we'll see in future is not mobile learning trickling down from the top of the institutions, but being forced on us from outside the institutions as people, the public, become more familiar with high specification devices of their own. So I think what we'll see is, as it were, consumer pressure defining how learning is owned and delivered in a way that is a sea change away from the institution seeing it as just small computers that you carry around, but essentially in terms of the politics of it, unchanged. I think in terms of the politics of it, we're about to see a big change. Well, that's my hope.
John, thanks very much indeed. Go enjoy your lunch.
And
thanks back to Graham.
Thank you to Jen, thank you to Dirk, thank you to everyone who's come on the programme today. We've certainly run out of time, I think we've run over a bit, but I think you agree, it's been a great programme, some real ideas going on, and guess what? You've got the chance to listen to it all again on the podcast version, which we'll be releasing very soon, and we'll be back here tomorrow with Sounds of the Bazaar, reporting with everything that's good from the second day of the Mobile Learning Conference Bremen. You've been listening to Sounds of the Bazaar. Sounds of the Bazaar, live internet radio, live from Bremen. Sounds of the Bazaar is licensed under a Creative Commons 3 license. Sounds of the Bazaar is produced and directed by Pontedeschi, live on location in Bremen.